Welcome to the International Taiwan Study Center podcast here at NTNU in Taipei. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Michael Oguezi, who right now is in Nigeria.
Yeah. I'm in southeastern part of Nigeria, and I'm in Enugu precisely. Here is another city within the Enugu state. It's in southeastern part of Nigeria.
And you are a Ministry of Foreign Affairs Fellow at the Taiwan Center for Security Studies at National Chengshu University, as well as being an associate professor at the Department of Political Science in the University of Nigeria. Yeah, I'm sure that keeps you pretty busy. And I know you were in Taiwan last year. Could you just kick off by telling us why did you decide to come to Taiwan?
You know, in Africa generally, not just in Nigeria, there is Chinese presence everywhere.
Yeah, sure.
So one significant thing that usually happens is people's inability to almost distinguish between what is Chinese and what is Taiwanese. There were a few of my friends in Taiwan in the same fellow. In fact, they were the ones who encouraged me to apply. And then when I did, it worked out. And then it enabled me to know more about Taiwan and how different it is from China. Otherwise, in Nigeria, I don't know, they have similar in appearance. So see a Taiwanese, see a Chinese, you think they're all the same.
Right. So, yeah. And so then when you came to Taiwan, what were some of the things that stood out as being unexpected to you potentially or different?
That's an interesting question. You see, like I said in the beginning, Chinese and Taiwanese. In Nigeria, there is a stereotype that we have about the Chinese. They're more very hostile people. Including in their communities in Nigeria here, they appear to be very hostile. So I was expecting to see such hostility on arrival in Taiwan. But surprisingly, it was diametrically opposite to the other. So Taiwanese people are very cordial people. They are people who are always to help you whenever you have problem. The only people that will find it pretty problematic coming to your aid might be those who don't understand English. So because of the language barrier, they tend to wave you. But once it is somebody that understands English, they're always very willing to help. And that's part of what I saw in Taiwan, that although I have not been to mainland, So by implication, I may not be able to tell better about the Chinese, but at least I'm using the conception of Chinese in Nigeria to reach the conclusion about the hostility of the people. My encounter also with Taiwanese when I went to the embassy for one or two things also convinced me that these are indeed different people from the other side. But I was thinking that maybe because I was relating with more of diplomats, that they will have better approach than the everyday Chinese that we meet on the street. But in Taiwan, it happened that all of them are virtually the same, providing help wherever there is a problem, always willing to help you wherever you encounter a challenge. So it's part of the thing I discovered on my arrival in Taiwan. And you can't fit to have a different opinion and formation of ideas about the people.
That's really good to hear. Yeah, that's great to hear. And then when you were in Taiwan, so I guess you were based at National Chengshu University. What kind of things were you researching, were you looking into and studying when you were here?
Okay, you know, my research interest basically is in security. And then I've also done some few studies on separatist movement in Nigeria and then some other African countries, including the ones in Cameroon. And you know, Taiwan also enjoys similar situation in terms of separatist movement, although they operate at two different levels, because Taiwan is almost a state within the state, unlike these other ones that I've been studying, which don't have so much character of their own apart from the state where they are domiciled. So my research in Taiwan was basically to see the implications of China's Vision 2035 on each sovereign statehood and generally on a threat of its national interest. So it's implicated in security and separatism. So that's what I was researching on. And God willing, very soon my work in that area will come out in one of the other two journals in East Asia.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, we'll look forward to reading it. In fact, maybe we can feature that in our newsletter when the time comes. So I know you mentioned just then as well, so you have written a lot about security, about politics, particularly in the African continent and in Nigeria specifically. I know one of the other areas that you've looked at is how colonialism is actually still a source, or the colonial legacy is still a source of instability in Nigeria and perhaps in other places too. Maybe you could explain that a little bit, and then maybe we can talk about how Nigeria and Taiwan both have experiences of colonialism.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. In Africa, we cannot say one or two things in terms of our security and development challenges without referring to our colonial legacies. So sometimes the more we tend to de-emphasize them, the more they also play out, because in the current era, what also happens is that you see a reflection of what happened in the past also playing out in the present. It's still a challenge, and that's why we cannot stop discussing it. But one particular thing about colonialism, whether in Africa or elsewhere, is that the nature of African encounter with the colonialists before colonialism wasn't the same with what others encountered. So it's part of our own challenge, and it's part of African challenge. But what I also found very, very similar in my experience in Taiwan was that, you see, there is this idea some of us or some people have that the elites politically tend to congregate in the same proximity. They tend to reason alike, irrespective of political divides or whatsoever. But I didn't see that in Taiwan. In Nigeria, for instance, I will give you examples. If you find members of the political class, either from PDP or from the APC or from other political parties, the only point at which they disagree is where you see them struggle about the national resources, how to be fitted into the national resources. But when they all converge at that level, maybe at the level of National Assembly or as members of the Executive Council or all that and all that, you see them behave in the same manner. You see them agree very easily to carry on with what they are doing, whether it's for or against the people. They can easily blend at that level. But I didn't see that in Taiwan. In fact, Taiwan became a very clear case of such a terrible elite division. And from my investigation, I discovered that, like I said, that it is a very significant problem threatening both is a problem with China, is relations with some other countries. I see Taiwan, although this could be a historical matter, just like we always refer to African colonial experience as a historical issue. So in Taiwan, it's also a historical matter. So that's what I see to be common among the elites. But they are still divided on several important issues of national interest that is indeed threatening the situation. So I see a semblance in this, drawing from both history and then the current situation.
Right. And then in terms of thinking of colonial legacy as a source of instability, what are some of the recommendations that you may have found for getting past that so that stability can be found in spite of the colonial legacy?
Okay. I will refer you in particular to Nigeria, which is quite different from what we've faced in Taiwan. You see, one critical colonial legacy that Nigeria inherited is a problem of the use of force in addressing this problem. And that's why even the kind of colonial policing that we had was a very forceful policing. It wasn't a police of the people. And this has continued up till present. And that has also affected Nigeria's approach, or even some post-colonial state approach, towards resolving its security problems. You see them tend to apply more force than their law. And then research and instances have shown that it is always very difficult for you to arrive at a long-lasting solution using force. Because if people use force to put together, once the force is out, then the problem that was there will continue to reoccur. And then at a time, even with the use of force, you will find people who, in the midst of your force, will continue to resist it, and the crisis will always continue to be found in such a parliament. So that I didn't see in Taiwan. But what I saw is that there is always, for Nigeria, there is not always that dialogue platform for ventilating fears of the minorities or fears of the people who feel marginalized and the rest of them. And the state will always want to use force to bring them together and then let them be at where they want them to be, which has never worked, and it has continued to happen. In Taiwan's situation, much as they don't have similar crises, the crisis of development, the crisis of unemployment, and the rest of them that prevail in African countries. In Taiwan, they don't also have that particular platform where a list of different political parties and traditions convene to discuss common problem. Because what I found out was that in the minds of all the parties, they are all working for the betterment of Taiwan, for the future of Taiwan. But even places where ordinarily they should agree, they disagree because this party does not necessarily understand what this one means by this and what this one sees everything wrong about the approach adopted by this one. So one of the recommendations I will make is always to have such dialogue platform where people can meet. And it is important in having such platform not to be just made up of politicians. You need to draw other people from other segments of the societies. In the case of Taiwan, you need to draw people from the intelligentsia, the universities and the rest of them, from the student body, from both leading politicians and the rest of them, from the business community, particularly those in the TSMC. Because these are critical stakeholders in whatever that happens to the system. Therefore, they always need to be brought together so that those who make policies at the realm of the government will also understand the perspective of the business class and then the youth, largely coming from their own platform. So that at the end, areas that will create more discord to be bridged. And then policymakers will understand themselves better and the rancor and division will be better managed and minimized. I think it's one critical thing here they need to do.
Oh, that's brilliant recommendations and very timely with all the conflict we see in the Taiwanese legislature at the moment.
Another important situation that they don't need to shy away from. You see, one critical problem in the international system, not just with Taiwan, is the problem. Europe is also suffering it at the moment. Is the tendency to take the enemy of their friend to be our enemy. Even when you don't have any ample reason to make such a person your enemy. Because he's already the enemy of the other camp, then he's already a potential enemy and you begin to treat him as such, thereby extending the enmity. I think that is also a critical problem with Taiwan that they also need to look into very critically.
Yeah, that's really, really perceptive point to make there, that the enemy of my friend doesn't need to be my enemy necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Thinking of interaction and exchanges between Taiwan and Nigeria, is there anything much that goes on? Does Taiwan have any visibility in Nigeria?
You see, you know, before the PRC was the ROC. But in the contemporary time, Taiwan is having general problem, not just in Nigeria, but in Africa. As you can see, the last time, you know, South Africa used to be one of the countries where Taiwan enjoyed cordial relationship. If you watch very well, even during the voting of the that evicted Europe from the United Nations, South Africa was a leading voice against such eviction. So they had historically enjoyed cordial relationship, and today it is being challenged. And there's only one factor that is responsible for the challenge: Chinese presence in Africa. China has deepened its network in Africa in such a way that it is making it difficult to reconnect, for these countries to reconnect with Taiwan the way they would have wanted to. And one of the issues is because China is making the recognition of Taiwan central to its relations with so many African countries. And that explains why sometimes you see, even where, like Nigeria, for instance, Nigeria is one of the states where Taiwan has presence. Because out of about 6 trade offices in Africa, Nigeria has 1, 2 in South Africa, and then 1 or 2 others in other parts of Africa. In Abuja, all the diplomatic offices used to be in the same federal capital territory. Until during the regime of President Buhari, something happened after China promised a number of loans and the rest of them and placed a condition that the trade office has to leave the federal capital territory so that it doesn't enjoy equal diplomatic standing with other sovereign nations. So Nigeria switched to that by asking Taiwan to move its trade office to Lagos. So Taiwan didn't take it lightly, but that was the reality of the situation. And also they retaliated by also moving Nigeria's trade office from Taipei to New Taipei. So that was how they responded. To this situation. But you see, it's only China's deep network and connection in Africa that is responsible for why Taiwan is not enjoying the kind of attention it should have enjoyed, even with its advancement in technology and all that, which would have been of very utmost interest to so many African countries. During the COVID-19 pandemic, for instance, if you watch Chinese investment across the globe, not just in Africa, listen there. In Africa in particular, Taiwanese investment immediately increased. In fact, it jumped almost over 100% of what it used to be. But the moment China rebounds back, the investment and the connection and the trade relation and everything started rescinding again. But there are avenues always in existence for Taiwanese trade office in Nigeria with the Nigerian government to communicate on how to strengthen their trade relations. But much as they have reached several agreements in several areas, most of these agreements have not been signed for it to be binding on either parties. And I'm sure what is responsible for this is deep Chinese presence, how it is watching with regard to this.
It's really interesting. One question on that, actually. I know from Western media, perhaps, and perhaps Taiwanese media to an extent, would tend to characterize China's presence in Africa from quite a negative light. That, like you say, it comes with strings, one being, you know, derecognition of Taiwan, another being this idea of debt traps and that China will invest as long as it then retains control over the infrastructure that it's building. Is that actually true? How would you qualify, for example, Chinese investment in Nigeria? Has it brought benefits to the Nigerian people?
Okay. You know, as a scholar in international relations and political science, states behave in a similar manner. Everybody is after their national interests. At the initial entrance of China to Africa, you know, it's always couched around, we like to call it the rhetorics of win-win relations. It's always within these rhetorics of win-win. It's not, we are not coming to relate with you like your colonial masters live relationship. In this time, we are equal partners in business. You help us, we help you, we relate in that order. That was the initial rhetoric that endowed China to several African countries. And then they came immediately with the partnership, and it got escalated with China's Belt and Road Initiative. So that initiative resulted in several agreements with many African countries, including Nigeria, on how to revitalize some moribund infrastructures in exchange for some other mineral resources, which to them others might have been collecting freely without having any important thing. So right from that time, there were several infrastructural projects, signature projects for that matter, which Chinese companies, China immediately leveraged this company in Africa and the rest of them to embark on this relationship so that you can easily see routes reconstructed or new ones created or imports refurbished and rehabilitated and the rest of them done using Chinese companies. And so at that stage, people were seeing the existence of these infrastructures and then they were happy with the Chinese. But not long, there was a slight discovery that is almost causing problem between the China and these Africans. I can tell you, there is always more or less very cordial relationship existing between the Chinese elites and so many of these African elites. But such cordial relationship is not replicated with the ordinary people of Africa, with the ordinary citizens. That is what we find. And we can explain the reasons why these things are so. So in the current situation, the reality is that minus some of this China-inspired infrastructure development, most we have nothing to boast of. That's just the reality. And one particular thing that distinguishes China's approach with the Western approach was that the West wouldn't mind giving you the money. They will give you the money in terms of loan for this. And even when they know that in some situations, there are some terrible leaders that will end up diverting this money. So China will not give you the money. You reach agreement on what they will get and what they will do. Then they will come and give you the infrastructure. They collect what the agreement was. So that nobody was seeing the money. As a result, at least you can see the infrastructure. But not long, this allegation of having infrastructure of less quality, the roads getting problems, so I don't know. One thing with China is that China is really a businessman, as I will put it. He is a business state, and there is nothing you will present to him and he will say, no, I don't want this. What it will simply do, it will give you the quality on the level of what you have promised to give back. So instead of telling you that he cannot deliver this thing because it will not meet the standard that it will want to be known with. No, it's not. It's not after that. It will agree. So it will give you the quality of what you have given it in return will mean. And then at the end, you see the infrastructure or whatever that was brought in that order, not to be of higher quality. So one critical thing is that you find projects that they did very wonderful, and then you find others they did very haphazardly, not as solid as one would have wanted them to be. So in the contemporary time, because there is deep involvement of China in virtually every sector in Nigeria, for instance, decided they have taken so many people out of business because the products they produce, ranging from fabrics to shoes and the rest of them, they can always get for you any quality that you can afford. And then at the end, those who don't operate at that level will be taken out of market, and then they are taking over. It's part of what is causing the problem down at the lower rung that people are seeing may cause problem in the foreseeable future, including in terms of talking about the debt trap and all that and all that. So that's about it.
Right. Well, there's a fascinating to hear. I mean, even in the Taiwan study circles, we don't often have an African perspective. I think it's really important that we hear more voices from, be it Africa or other parts of the world, not quite so European and US focused, which sometimes we get sucked into. Thank you so much for the insights that you've shared. In terms of going forwards, will you be doing any more comparative studies between Taiwan and Nigeria?
Yes, of course. My brief sojourn in Taiwan has opened a number of opportunities, and which will also expand my research interest to see how we can be doing a comparative studies of these two countries and areas where they can relate better and learn from each other. So, you know, Taiwanese products in its current forms in Nigeria are seen to be of something we call Japanese standard.
Okay.
You see, in Nigeria, once we get that this is Japanese standard, it means that it is something of higher quality. And if you hear that this is Chinese standard, it means just get it and tomorrow you are returning to buy another one. And they also tell in terms of the pricing of these products. So moving forward, we'll be looking at all these things so that we can create the consciousness among the people, including in understanding that there is a significant difference between what we call Taiwanese and what we call Chinese, much as both could be taken to be Chinese in the international system among the international organization. That these are almost two different peoples with completely different systems, with completely orientations, and the rest of that operating as one country. In fact, my sojourn there will open the forum and will begin to interrogate some of these problems. The problem with Taiwan, too, is that it so much believes in the global north. It doesn't think that the global south merits its significant attention. And that will be very terrible for an entity that wishes to reconnect with the global environment. The global south cannot be dismissed in a hurry. And if it means looking towards using more of para-diplomacy, since China is blocking the official route, nothing stops them from using para-diplomacy. And before you know it, you are creating more attention, you are generating more awareness, which will also help in passing across your message when the need arises. I think these are very critical things that will be exploited moving forward.
Yeah, that's a brilliant point. I think you're absolutely right. I think if we can see Taiwan paying more attention to, as you say, the global south, that's something which historically hasn't really happened as much as now is a really prominent opportunity not to be missed. Right, it's been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for coming online and chatting with us. So I hope we can talk again soon.
No problem. Brilliant. Thanks for sticking with me.
So that was Professor Michael Agwezi, Ministry of Foreign Affairs Fellow at the Taiwan Center for Security Studies, National General University, an associate professor in the Department of Political Science in the University of Nigeria. Thanks for joining us today. I'll look forward to having your company again for our next episode. And don't forget, you can sign up for our newsletter from International Taiwan Study Center here at NTNU from the show notes. So until next time, goodbye.